Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. I'm your Bible teacher, Pastor Brad Winship, pastor of Harbor Bible Church in Lawrence Harbor, New Jersey. This week's program is an update on the Iranian situation. 1 minute, President Trump says that there's a deal. The next minute, we're bombing Iran again. On Friday, last Friday, June 12th, Trump posted on Truth Social the terms that Iran leaked out to the fake news have nothing to do with the terms that we have agreed to in writing. What they said, including their weak and pathetic statements on having a deal, bears no relation to the truth. Very dishonorable people to deal with. With them, there is no such thing as a deal in good faith. Amazing. Also, their totally rebuffed drone attack last night against Indian ships leaving the Hormuz Strait is totally unacceptable. They better get their act together and fast. President Donald J. Trump. But then Trump announced that a deal with Iran has been reached and it will be signed on Sunday. And on Sunday, President Trump posted, "The deal with the Islamic Republic of Iran is now complete. Congratulations to all. I hereby fully authorize the toll-free opening of the Strait of Hormuz and simultaneously herewith authorize the immediate removal of the United States naval blockade. Ships of the world, start your engines. Let the oil flow. President Donald J. Trump." But Sunday came and went, and Iran signed nothing. But the new claim is that the deal is supposed to be signed Friday, June 19th. But as Donald Trump previously said many times and in many different ways, with them, there is no such thing as a deal in good faith. You can't make a peace treaty with radical Islamists. And President Trump knows that Islamic radicals in Iran, by their very religion, cannot sign a peace deal or surrender to the United States or Israel. And in the Middle East, everyone knows that there is no such thing as a peace deal, just a ceasefire that will last for a couple months until everyone rearms. And so this so-called peace deal that the president is talking about, it's not really a peace deal at all. It's actually an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, which is an agreement to make an agreement. An agreement to temporarily end hostilities while negotiations take place over another 60 days. There is no agreement concerning Iran giving up its nuclear weapons. No agreement concerning its attack on Israel, its funding of Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis. No agreement concerning its control over the Strait of Hormuz. Yet the administration is claiming Iran will be giving up its nuclear weapon program, its attack on Israel through Hezbollah and Lebanon, and that the Strait of Hormuz will now be open and toll-free. But the IRGC in Iran has already stated that they have agreed to none of those conditions. And even now, Iran is claiming that this deal that Trump has put forth means that Iran has won the war against the United States. Can the United States end the war without Iran having to concede anything? So this is really bizarre. The U.S. has completely defeated Iran. We've cut off their oil revenues. Their economy is non-existent. Their leadership is fractured. And the U.S. has ended the war without Iran agreeing to anything. And certainly not signing an unconditional surrender. At the most, all we have done is to get Iran to talk to the United States and Switzerland for the next 60 days. I'm not a prophet, nor the son of a prophet. But I will guarantee you that at these talks, Iran will not agree to anything. They will only be buying for themselves more time as they resume funding their Islamic cult through oil revenues while the people of Iran suffer. Think about America in the past, the World War II generation. They would never have agreed to terms such as these, which looks more like the U.S. is capitulating This does look like a win for the IRGC. Over the weekend, to counter this perception, President Trump was very vocal about this deal being nothing like the deal Obama made with Iran. So needless to say, conservatives in America and the Iranian people themselves, who are hoping for and expecting some sort of regime change in Iran, are very disappointed. The hope was that the son of the crown prince of Iran, Pahlavi, would come back into power and implement what he had promised, turning Iran back into a non-Muslim, pro-Israeli, Western democracy. But these messages coming out of the White House have been quite confusing, to say the least. Here is an NBC article that sums it up, entitled "Deal or No Deal." Trump's social media post adds confusion to the Iranian conflict. The president posted that a peace deal with Iran would be announced shortly and that the deal was largely negotiated. Then he posted it wasn't even fully negotiated yet. I don't ever remember having such confounding messages coming out of the White House. Something seems to be going on that we're not privy to. So, of course, there are two reactions to this. The first is that Trump is a genius. He's playing three-dimensional chess. He's playing the IRGC. He's playing the media. And he's playing the oil markets. The other opinion is that President Trump's an idiot. He's gotten us into a war that he now wants to get out of. And he's desperate for some resolution before the midterm elections. And where one falls on those two assessments is all based upon one's prior opinions of Donald Trump. And then there are all of the pundits, the Monday morning quarterbacks claiming to know the solution and know what's going on. Yeah, I would agree with Trump's post last month, quote, "Don't listen to the losers who are critical about something they know nothing about." People think they know what the president ought to do, but they don't realize that they don't have all the facts. Now, on my part, I would love to see the United States follow through with regime change, put some troops on the ground, arm and organize the Iranian people, declare a new government and put Pahlavi into power, set him up in an office in a region in Iran that supports him, let a civil war play out. Just like there was the Iranian Revolution in 1979 that toppled the government, it can happen again, but in the other direction. And the majority of the people in Iran actually want a change in government. And only through regime change will Iran ever be at peace with the West. Because currently, Iran is being run by an Islamic death cult that, according to their theology, must work to bring about Armageddon. So that's my plan. But what do I know? Like you, I've been following this and trying to figure out what's really going on. I believe I have a possible answer. But before I share that, I'd like to just list some factors to consider. First, as I said earlier, the leadership in Iran, the Ayatollahs and the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, will never surrender to or make peace with the United States or Israel. Even if they do, it will be taqiyya, the Islamic teaching that a Muslim can lie to their enemies. And I believe Trump and Vance and the whole administration know that they cannot trust any treaty with Iran. Second, the leadership in Iran is divided. Nobody really knows who's in charge of the country. Last week, the president of Iran submitted his resignation because he said he was powerless and couldn't fulfill his duties. The country has been taken over by IRGC commanders. The IRGC rejected his resignation because they still need him as their figurehead. So who is President Trump really dealing with? And even if representatives of the country accept a peace plan, it doesn't mean that it'll be accepted by the hardliners. Third, word has it that President Trump's advisors told him right from the beginning that regime change is not possible in Iran. The United States has had a very bad track record of trying to impose regime change on nations. You know, I question that advice, since the Iranian people want a regime change themselves. But it is true, if change happens, it has to be coming from the Iranian people themselves. It certainly cannot look as if the government has been set up by the Americans. That is, if the government is to be legitimate. Fourth, I don't believe President Trump sees Pahlavi as a good leader. Quote from Trump a few weeks ago, some people like him, Pahlavi, and we haven't been thinking too much about that. It would seem to me that somebody from within maybe would be more appropriate. As I've said, he looks like a very nice person, unquote. And I suspect that Trump sees Pahlavi as a rich elitist, a paper pusher, not someone who could lead a revolution. Even though he talks about wanting to support the West, his father was a pushover, and that's why he was run out of Iran back in 1979. A fifth point to consider. Trump is a businessman, and he is likely concerned about oil markets. In a panic, oil prices could jump to $150 a barrel. And every time oil prices started to rise, Trump announced that a deal is imminent and the strait will be open soon. And so none of these oil dealers wanted to sign contracts paying too much for oil when the bottom could drop out tomorrow. So the strategic ambiguity on the part of Trump is helping to keep oil prices down. And over the last few weeks, oil prices were over $100 a barrel. This week, after Trump announced that a deal has been accepted, prices dropped to $80 a barrel, and they're falling. And over the past few months, the United States has been drawing from its strategic oil reserves, and it's about to run dry. Number six, we could speculate about other factors, such as the American people don't want to see troops on the ground. Trump doesn't want the war to be a downer for the 250th July 4th celebration, or that Trump has to end the war before the midterms. But here is what I believe is the major factor determining Trump's foreign policy with Iran. And it is, in some sense, irrational in the way the laws have been set up. President Trump's actions are being influenced by the War Powers Act, passed by Congress back in 1973. Trump has a constitutional barrier. And Congress has already defined the terms of the Constitution in regard to the Constitution giving only Congress the right to declare war. And the courts today will agree with Congress. Now, according to the law, the president can only commit U.S. armed forces to hostilities for a maximum of 60 days without initial congressional approval, followed by an additional 30-day period strictly for the safe withdrawal of troops. So the president only has 60 days to conduct a military operation. After this, Congress must declare war, which has not happened since 1942. Every conflict since 1942 has been by the president, and that's why Congress passed the War Powers Act to limit the president, so that there are no more Vietnams. So President Trump only has 60 days to battle Iran. He knows it. And what's even worse, the IRGC also know it. So they don't have to agree to anything. They know that President Trump has his hands tied. He cannot fight them for more than 60 days. So notice how the president has stopped the war, how he has declared that 60-day negotiation period, and how he has continually spoke about the peace deal being in the works, ready to be signed. He was doing this to ward off the War Powers Act. The Democrats in the Senate and the House have tried to pass legislation stopping Trump's actions in Iran, but they were blocked by the Republicans. But on May 19th, the Senate voted to direct the president to withdraw U.S. troops. Then on June 3rd, the House voted the same. Now, the president can veto the resolution, but the law already exists in the 1973 Wars Powers Act. The president says that that law is unconstitutional, but he knows that challenging it would not stand up in the courts. So President Trump is being forced to declare a deal and the ending of hostilities, even though the IRGC is not willing to make a deal. The president's recent threats to blow up their oil refineries, their ports, and their electric grid was something that he could do in a day and still avoid the Wars Powers Act. But it was mostly a threat to get Iran to hurry up and make a deal. So we haven't heard this explanation on the news or from the White House that Trump's hand is being forced by the Wars Powers Act. And of course, Trump doesn't want to say anything about this so as to let the Iranians know he has to give up. But they know. And the media isn't talking about this probably to keep the Democrats from looking like the bad guys. It's really bizarre that our president can't fight to win a battle with our enemies because Congress is divided. But that too is the providence of God. So that's my take on the situation. I welcome you to do the research to see if there's any truth behind what I'm saying. I don't claim infallibility. But this is simply the conclusion I have come to, given the facts I've accumulated. Now for a short Bible study. I recently had a great conversation with a brother where we shared all sorts of scriptures about God's work in Iran. That is to save for himself a people out of the nation of Iran. Remember, God is calling for himself a people out of every nation, tribe, and language. Revelation chapter 5. And that's the main story behind every event we're seeing in the world. What will best save and sanctify those who are called? Although some are looking to President Trump to bring about liberation in Iran and bring about other prophetic events in the Middle East, and certainly God will use President Trump as God used Cyrus, but the liberation of the church in Iran and the fulfilled prophecy is something that God, and only God, can do. And most likely it will be done in such a way that it'll be acknowledged that it wasn't Donald Trump who did the work. This was the hand of God. So much more needs to happen by the hand of God for the prophecy to be fulfilled that God will set up his throne in Elam, the people of Persia, the Iranians. Jeremiah chapter 49, verse 37. So I will shatter Elam before their enemies and before those who seek their lives, and I will bring calamity upon them, even my fierce anger, declares the Lord. And I will send out a sword after them until I have consumed them. Then I will set up my throne in Elam and destroy out of it its king and its princes, declares the Lord. But it will come about in the last days that I will restore the fortunes of Elam, declares the Lord. Now, although this prophecy had an immediate fulfillment in 600 BC, this is biblical prophecy. So we should consider that it has a future dual fulfillment, and even the text itself says it will come about in the last days. So let's not discount the historic fulfillment, as some do, but be open to both the historic fulfillment and the future fulfillment. And we do see in the Bible that God sent his prophet to evangelize the people of Islam. You ask, which prophet? The prophet Daniel was sent into exile into Babylon. Babylon was soon defeated by the Persians, and Daniel became a spiritual and political leader in Persia. Daniel chapter 6, verse 25. Then Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and the men of every language who were living in all of the land, may your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and endures forever. And his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. Verse 28, so this Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persians. So the king of the Medes and of the Persians made this statement after he saw how Daniel was delivered from the lion's den, and after he saw that the adversaries of Daniel were exposed and defeated. He even had the accusers of Daniel be cast into the lion's den in Daniel's place. And even before this, Daniel had a testimony that made an impact on the Persians. Daniel chapter 6, verse 3. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and the satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit. And the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. It was God who put Daniel in Persia and brought him to the place of power and influence. And in this, we see another example of the principle that God will even use the disobedience of the Jews, in this case, their exile into Babylon, to spread his word throughout the nations. Romans 11:30. For just as you were once disobedient to God, but now have been shown mercy because of their disobedience. But think about this. God was sending Daniel to be a prophet before the Persian people. How many nations get that opportunity? God must have a plan to save many souls among the sons of Elam, the Iranians, as in the prophecy, God will set up his throne there. And God was reestablishing his authority and pushing back the powers of darkness in the land by setting up Daniel. And look at the decree made by the king of Persia. In all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. His dominion is forever. That is an Old Testament confession of genuine saving faith in Jehovah God. Now, later in Persia, 100 years later, and a lot can happen in 100 years, in the book of Esther, Haman comes up with a plot to kill all of the Jews living in Persia, particularly the Jewish Persian official Mordecai. And rather than succeeding in his plot, the king of Persia humiliates Haman and requires Haman to parade Mordecai through the streets, proclaiming that Mordecai is the king's favorite. So Haman is totally dejected and humiliated. And his wife, who first supported his assault against the Jews, now changes her mind after hearing from the wise men, who say to Haman, Esther chapter 6, verse 13, Haman recounted to Zeresh, his wife, and to all of his friends everything that had happened to him. Then his wise men, advisors in the Persian government, and Zeresh, his wife, said to him, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish origin, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him. So why would the wise men, these scholars, these advisors in Persia, say this? Well, because they knew the testimony and the example of Daniel, that Daniel's God was the true God. And 475 years later, it would be wise men from Persia who would bring gifts to Jesus born in Bethlehem, coming to worship the newborn king. And that's faith. So God has been doing some great things among the Persians, and he will not forget the work that he has started in the land. Now, even historically, the Persians have been Zoroastrians, which is a monotheistic belief in one true God, which throughout history was a very different belief than all of the surrounding nations. Persian monotheism was God preparing them to receive the true faith. And today in Iran, the church is growing. Many Iranians consider Islam an occupying, invading religion that doesn't belong in the nation. And many Iranians say they love the Jews. And while the Arab Islamists in Iran, who control the country, they're about 26% of the country, while they make it their life ambition to destroy Israel, the Iranian people themselves love Israel. They consider themselves one with Israel. They all descended from Shem. And in all of the pro-Iranian regime protests in every major city around the world, those who are in favor of the Islamic regime just so happened to also be opposed to Israel. It's a spiritual theological issue. Now, Trump has said to all of the nations in the Middle East, Pakistan, Bahrain, the UAE, Turkey, Egypt, Jordan, Qatar, if they want to have any part in the future Middle East negotiations concerning Iran, they have to be in full agreement with the Abrahamic Accords. Hence, Trump, whether knowingly or unknowingly, is undermining the Islamic narrative for the past 50 years, where the Islamic world must be united against Israel. And that narrative is the power and agenda behind the Iranian regime. That's now being undermined in the region by Trump's Abrahamic Accords. It's Islam versus the Abrahamic Accords. Anyway, by way of conclusion, we need to pray for change in the Iranian government and the liberation of the Iranian people from this Islamic cult that has taken over the country. Notice that there is a delay in the liberation of the Iranian people. The Islamic regime is holding on. And it just so happens that we read in the book of Daniel, in regard to his time in Persia, that Daniel was praying and an angel was sent by God with the answer. But the angel said that the prince of Persia, of all people and places, was withstanding him for 21 days. Then behold, Michael, one of the chief princes of God, came to help this angelic messenger. And it's universally understood that this prince of Persia was a demonic being controlling the nation of Persia. Satan has his principalities and powers and rulers in heavenly places. And today, Satan also controls Persia, Iran. And he's not about to easily give up his minions and their Islamic cult running the nation. Let's not lose sight of the fact that Satan and his demons are not omnipotent. They can lose territory and they can lose control over nations. And although God has a prophetic plan for the Iranian people, and many of them are true believers who will be helped by God, God will still use our prayers to accomplish the work. So let's pray for Iran, that Satan would be defeated there. Thanks for listening. Stand firm in the word, and may Jesus Christ reign.